I'm Mike Morgan, and we're talking with Robert Goyer, Tom Haines, and Mac McClellan, who lead their organization's print and publications initiatives. Flying, AOPA Pilot, and EA Sport Aviation are the ones most identified with these folks. The FAA has been petitioned to exempt some pilots from requiring the third-class medical certificate, and this activity, driven by AOPA and EAA, has drawn now over 14,000 signatures. Does this amount of grassroots support make this a done deal?
Let me correct you just a moment there, Mike. It's actually over 15,000.
Okay.
So,
and counting, probably.
And counting. To put this in perspective, the highest number of comments any petition had ever received, petition for exemption, was below 3,000. That was back on an LSA petition when those rules were being created. So more than five times as many people have commented on this. The best we can tell, AOPA and EAA, as many as half of all pilots could take advantage of this. In other words, more than half the existing fleet would qualify by definition of being 180 horsepower less fixed gear, four seats or fewer. And that describes about half of all the flying people do daylight VFR. So it has a huge potential impact to simplify and cut the cost of the way most people fly, the majority, for fun and recreation, and to get to Oshkosh for that matter. And the reason that we are all hopeful is that this is the first petition, there have been many asking to do away with third class medical. What this one does is we're offering the alternative, and that is the requirement for training and testing and recurrent training, so that pilots were all taught how to self-assess our medical fitness to fly, temporary conditions, temporary medications we're taking, how they could affect us. That's something that's never happened before. An AME, every couple years, or if you're younger, every 5 years, maybe ask a couple questions, and then you're good to go for the rest of the time. So I think it's this alternative approach that makes me hopeful. What do you think, Tom?
Oh, no, I agree. And this is one of those things that it is so logical and makes so much sense. It's like, how could you argue with this? My guess is we've got an argument on our hands going forward with the FAA. But think about it. I mean, as has been many times pointed out in the discussions around this, is that, you know, you, depending on your age, you go to the doctor once a year, once every 2 years, 5 years, whatever, and have a medical exam of the, you know, one could argue how thorough that exam is, right? I've had ones where literally you could write the check, you're good to go. So if you think about that,
Which is that AME time I run?
Offline, Mac. So if you think about that, on that one day, the doctor has looked at you and said, yeah, this guy is probably not going to croak in the next few minutes. And every day after that, we self-certify anyhow. You get in the airplane, do you feel like flying today? Are you feeling up to it? That sort of thing. So why is it that we have to go, you know, with that periodically to a doctor and spend usually around $100 or more if it's a first class? But we're not talking about first class today, we're talking about third class. So why is it that you have to pay that fee, go through those hoops for what seems a very marginal benefit increase in safety? We know that the number of accidents attributable to medical causes is tiny. And even then, those people had been through a medical, so it's not like it prevented those kind of accidents from happening anyhow. So it doesn't seem to be something that really needs to be in place. And so why not get rid of it? Give it a shot.
Right.
We have 7 years of data from the light sport, since light sport came along, where sport pilots are self-certifying, and really no indication whatsoever that that has had a negative impact on safety. And so why not try it for another group? And ideally, I think we'd all believe that if we can show in a couple of years that that's been successful, that the next step would be even broadening it to a greater group of people with third-class medicals.
And there's another thought on this, and that is, let's say we agree that the medical's objective certification is to minimize, mitigate risk. Okay, if we give a pilot a third-class medical, he can fly any airplane. Boeings, Gulfstreams, anything, as long as he's not being paid. A third class allows you to fly anything. What we're asking for is the right to fly a small airplane, so the public has almost no risk of being, you know, damaged on the ground, and carry only one person. So that risk is very small, controlled to the pilot and that one passenger. So we're asking to actually restrict this person's ability to take risks in exchange for this training in lieu of a medical.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Is that pilots are going to have to volunteer to be more restrictive in the type of flying that they do in order to take advantage of this. Ideally, I think all down the road, we'd like to figure out how to make it even more valuable.
Of course.
But let's take the first step.
Once we collect data, then...
Yeah.
And
Robert?
I think we've actually got a good deal more data than that, because we have pilots who, we can see the record of their self-certification every single year, and those are older pilots, aging pilots, who voluntarily take themselves out of the cockpit without a word to anybody. And we can see that the risk with aging pilots is extremely well managed. They make smart decisions, and if they're making smart decisions, I think it's a very reasonable assumption to make that the rest of us are. And just anecdotally, we know that that's true. We know that pilots use excellent judgment as far as our medical risks are concerned. And there are occasional, like Tom said, the number of accidents directly attributable to medical causes are tiny. And I would say I also wanted to applaud both AOPA and EAA for this work on this issue. We at Flying for many years, before I was the editor-in-chief, have been in favor of the driver's license third-class medical. And I think that the proposal was brilliantly written, because what it does is it offers the FAA a carrot and says, this is what we're willing to give if you move in our direction a good ways too. And I would certainly hope that with the groundswell of support that Mac alluded to before among the pilot community, that the FAA would finally get it and see that this is a good idea. This is the right way to go. It's going to save pilots a lot of money. There's going to be an equivalent level of safety. If anything, I would argue that the proposal doesn't go far enough. I think there's almost zero risk involved with having four passengers or more and having higher powered or faster airplanes. And I understand why the proposal was written and why it was, but I think that the third class medical going away and being replaced by self-certification is really the way we need to go ultimately.
How will we know that this has been effective? How will we know this has worked?
The FAA is not under a specific time restriction to react. Is that what you're talking about?
Assume that it is that the petition is granted. How will we know that this change in practice has worked, has done the things that we all kind of want it to do for GA?
Well, I think using measures that are available of hopefully a growth in flying activity, more people continuing because of the reduced hassle factor. Then, of course, on the safety side, we can use NTSB investigation reports to see if there was any change in medical incapacitation involvement in accidents.
Well, is there an enforcement dimension to this, and how would that work? Just to make sure that people who self-restrict don't actually surpass the restrictions that they've agreed to.
As long as they qualify for a driver's license in their state, then exactly like an LSA, they would qualify to use the driver's license in lieu of a third class. But the education component is going to be, in my opinion, powerful enough to convince somebody that, I mean, forget the huge ones like a heart attack, but just even temporary conditions like a cold, taking over-the-counter medications. The NTSB is even focused endlessly on things such as fatigue or stress in your life caused by some family event, a new job, that kind of thing. Those are all considerations in fitness to fly that are totally untaught, and we're planning to teach them.
Well, I would just say that I'm not sure if maybe your question was also about enforcement. I mean, today there's... If my medical certificate expires and I continue flying, who's going to know? I mean, if I get RAM checked and I can't produce a medical certificate, I'm in trouble. Or if I have an accident, my insurance company may have something to say about what the result is. If I live through it, then it doesn't matter. I'm not caring so much at that point if I don't. So anyhow, I mean, sure, I guess somebody who has medically self-certified, let their medical expire, is medically self-certifying, and then chooses to fly a high-performance single-engine airplane, which is outside the type of aircraft allowed under this petition exemption, they could conceivably get caught by the FAA. And when, of course, we would hope that that wouldn't happen, but, it could, but it also could happen today, the same thing with somebody just out there flying without a medical certificate. So.
Right. So it sounds like there's not a meaningful opportunity nor a meaningful risk around this, not a whole lot different than what we're accustomed to already.
It's a big step for the FAA, so let's not forget that this is not a done deal by any means. Even with 14,000-15,000 signatures on the petition and comments to the record, it is still open. People can go by the AOPA tent today. We've got a computer, a terminal set up dedicated where people can go online today and post their comments regarding the exemption. So,
was the comment period reopened, or is it still open?
Extended.
Yes.
It was extended an additional 70 days. Is that right, Tom?
I think so.
I think so.
So it's still not too late for people to go online airline. I think both of our organs.
And there's good reason to, it sounds like, because it's not a done deal, as you said.
Oh, absolutely. I think the more support we can get behind this thing, it becomes harder and harder for the FAA, who's naturally risk averse, and it's easy for them to say no to things like this, because if they say yes and something were to happen, if there were some kind of an accident that happened with somebody flying an airplane who had under this exemption in the future that chosen not to get a medical certificate, you know, somebody in Congress later in some hearing could go back and beat up somebody at the FAA and say, how could you let this happen? And so, of course, they're naturally risk-averse. The easy answer for them to say is to say no.
Yeah.
But it also exposes the big lie. And the big lie is that these medicals have some kind of effect on enhancing safety, and they don't. About the most you can say about a third-class medical is that by the end of the examination, the doctor certifies that you're still alive. And you know, you can go flying at that point.
Well, speaking of Congress, by the way, in the minute or so we have left in this segment, the Pilots' Bill of Rights is now on the president's desk, or about to be. Big deal? Good thing?
I think it is. What it does, it mostly slows down the FAA's process in the enforcement side. And bringing clarity to the NOTAM, I mean, if anybody can read a NOTAM, I'd like to meet them. It's some strange language with effectiveness from and a bunch of, I mean, it's just crazy. It doesn't need to be that complicated. It was created in the days of, you know, 80 character teletypes. And so we need to improve that process. And that's a very important component, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just puts pilots who have been affected by an enforcement action on some kind of level playing ground with everybody else in the world who has some things available to them, like, oh, present me with the evidence that you're going to use against me, which the FAA really didn't have any great guidelines on how they had to do that with ATC tapes and flight service station tapes and whatnot. And this provides some guidance on when that's to be made available and timing and that sort of thing, affects the FAA's ability to do emergency revocations and that sort of thing. So it's all good things for pilots, long over. Overdue, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's been kind of a complicated process because the sponsor of the bill is somebody who sponsored it because he had a run-in with the FAA and he was treated poorly. And you know, we hear from our readers all the time, readers who have had issues with the FAA, who have been treated badly by inspectors who felt very little need to conduct themselves ethically, and hopefully our big hope is that with the Pilots' Bill of Rights, they will feel a little bit more accountable and that they will alter their behavior in order to be the public servants that they are, instead of being unaccountable to anybody and treating the pilots in a way that is really counter to the democratic process in a lot of cases.